welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Varsha.
And today on the pod, we are going to focus on two stories. One, everyone is talking about, which is the shutdown, and what looks like will be a temporary solution to the problem. And then we are also going to talk more about the family separations that have been happening at the border, because it is... Every single time we talk about this topic, I feel like I say, I didn't know it could get worse. And I feel like that's just sort of jinxing it, because of course it can get worse, because it has gotten worse. So those are going to be the two stories we're going to focus on today. It is great to be back. So Varsha, how has your week been?
Yeah, my weekend was great. I had a really great first week back at school, and then I spent a couple weeks in D.C. So it was a lot of fun, my break. D.C. was a really cold, and I'm not missing the cold.
Hell, I think Berkeley's cold. Like, I live in Los Angeles. Like, yeah. Shit. Anything under 70, I'm like, I need a jacket immediately.
I know. It's like... Basically, I wore out my shoes by wearing multiple pairs of socks. My shoes are too big now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, but it did look like you had a good time in D.C., though.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Okay, Devin, how did the longest shutdown in history finally come to an end?
There are several different ways to tackle how to talk about the government shutdown. Most media outlets, rightly, have been focusing on the 800,000 people who were furloughed or, you know, forced to work without pay. But there are other angles that don't get talked about as much that... I think needs some coverage. So, for example, now there is a 3-week extension resolution on the table that will fund the government and start back paying the people for the last two paychecks, although government contractors are unlikely to see back pay. So not everyone actually gets a solution here. And while that's very good and very important, what I do want to take a minute to talk about before we go into the details of that is that, yes, it's great that this is avoided, at least for now. Maybe in 3 weeks we won't have to go through this again. But we were getting to the point where food stamps were going to run out. Mm-hmm. We were already at the point where domestic violence shelters had their funding cut off, where services for the most vulnerable populations in this country were the first to go. Right. And I think that there's a real human element there that hasn't been focused on. I mean, obviously the devastation of just not having the federal government open for 35 days is more than enough. But I did want to just take a minute, though we didn't get to that point, that we were talking about hurting the people that always get hurt in the situation, which is people of color, low income populations, and women. And that's always who gets hurt first. And that's really, I really just wanted to point that out.
I also wanted to point out that while a lot of people, and rightly so, are talking about how Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats, specifically Nancy Pelosi, was able to hold the line against funding a really stupid border wall in exchange for opening the government, they were able to not cave to that demand while Donald Trump was literally holding, you know, thousands of workers' paychecks hostage. They didn't cave to that command. We should also give credit to the fact that, there were this morning before the resolution was announced, federal officials temporarily stopped flights in and out of New York's LaGuardia Airport. Basically, a lot of workers weren't showing up to work. And then also this morning, Sarah Nelson, who heads the president of the Association of the Flight Attendants, basically she is the head of the Flight Attendants Union. She basically said, we are going to start mobilizing immediately because her union, you know, flight attendants aren't federal workers. And so while federal workers, it is illegal for them to strike under Taft-Hartley, which is a horrific law passed in 1947. Flight attendants were ready, and so were other non-federal workers. They were beginning to get ready for an actual strike to stop this shutdown because because thousands of TSA workers and other federal workers were basically being screwed. They had to come in. Air traffic controllers had to come in. And literally a couple days ago, air traffic controllers released a statement saying, we have no idea how dangerous it is to fly without workers getting paid. But trust me, it is more dangerous than you think. And so it was a really harsh moment there. And I'm thankful to the fact that, you know, other workers were calling sick outs. There were IRS workers as well as, you know, federal workers who were willing to, you know, risk losing their jobs. And I feel like if this had gone on even longer, we would have been looking at major labor action, and rightly so. And so I just... thank God it's over, and it's over not just because of the fact that Nancy Pelosi is a fucking badass, but it's also over because federal workers and other workers are also badasses.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about we've never had to deal with something like this, and I think that that's really important when we say something has never happened in the history of this country, sometimes, at least to me, sometimes that feels a little abstract, mm-hmm. right? Like, okay, well, there was the first email was sent at some point, right? And we got used to that. And there's a lot of firsts. And what does that really mean? And I don't mean that to minimize what's been going on here, but more to sort of, you know, kind of bring, like, kind of sharpen the what it means when something like this happens for the first time. Because this isn't just a new thing. This isn't just something that we haven't figured out how to encounter. This is something that structurally we had no plan for. And yeah. And I think that that's a really important distinction. Because, like you said, federal workers not being allowed to strike is completely bananas. I mean, to say the absolute very least about it. And to have a situation like this, where really the only power for the people involved would have been to strike, which is eventually what started happening. You know, we've basically set up a system in which the president is allowed to play hostage with 800,000 people, and those 800,000 people have no recourse.
Yeah. And Pelosi made a really good point. I think it was a couple of days ago where she said, there's no point in Democrats giving in right now, because if they gave in right now and gave this wall funding specifically for this wall, not other types of border security or whatever, then this would tell Donald Trump, hey, he can hold federal workers hostage anytime and get what he wants. And that is right. No way to run a government. That is no way to treat federal workers. And that's no precedent to set, because in the future, and I'm not saying this would happen because Democrats we're just better people. I'm just going to say it. At least we make better presidents in recent history. And there's no way, you know, Republicans would be willing to let future President Elizabeth Warren shut down the government over a wealth tax for millions of dollars. Right. There's no way right. Republicans exactly. would cave right. on that. And they shouldn't have to cave right. on that. There should be a process to negotiate legislation that is aside from let's shut the government down and screw over workers for 30 plus days, right? And right. so this is no right. way exactly. for Trump to basically conduct himself or conduct what he wants in legislation. And the fundamental thing about this is we have gone 35 days of workers going without pay for nothing, because this is the exact same right. continuing resolution that fucking Paul Ryan could have fucking passed. Because I just want to everyone is blaming the shutdown on Donald Trump, and rightly so, because it is his stupid need for a wall that we had this in the first place. But go back to December when this began. The Senate unanimously passed a continuing resolution to open the government for 3 weeks, and it went to the House, and Paul Ryan, being the spineless coward that he was, as he was leaving the Speaker's office, as he was leaving politics probably forever, he was like, instead of resisting Donald Trump for doing something stupid that none of my members even want, which is a wall, I am going to kowtow to him one last time. I am going to let him run the show one last time and not pass this House resolution. And then the same, when Nancy Pelosi became Speaker in January, the House passed the same resolution. And Mitch McConnell said, oh yeah, I'm going to let Donald Trump run the show because Donald Trump is a great strategist and he knows this shutdown is going to work. Finally, I was reading some backdoor TikToks on like what was actually happening with this shutdown. And finally, what was happening was like Pelosi was basically telling McConnell, do you literally want to close down Congress and the Senate? Like, do you not want to be a co-equal branch of government anymore? Because that's what you're doing right now by letting Donald Trump take the reins on this. And Mitch McConnell finally was like, this is done. But not because Mitch McConnell cares about federal workers, but because Mitch McConnell only cares about nominating and appointing justices and judges. And so he was like, I'm over this game. No Republican comes off looking good here. Either you have people like...
Right, right. Well, and I think that's ultimately always what it was going to be, right? It was always going to be about saving your own skins. Because they don't care. We know they don't care. Wilbur fucking Ross said, I don't understand why people are making such a big deal out of not being paid for 35 days. Like, why don't they just go to a bank and get a low interest loan or whatever people do? And
bananas.
I mean, okay, just there are obviously so many things that are a problem with that I don't even really need to go into them. But the first being, especially when you're talking about people who work for the FBI and in that sector of the government, you're not allowed to take on debt at all. And your security clearance depends upon you not having debt, not having any way for people to, you know, get compromise on you. So debt is a really easy way. If you're in debt and you're worried, you can be paid off. So going to get a low interest loan, first of all, is not a thing. And second of all, would not even be the solution that would allow people to keep their jobs.
Bridge loans don't really exist anymore. And Wilbur Ross is literally, he reminds me of Lucille Bluth from that scene in Arrested Development where she's like, what could a banana cost? $10? That's basically
$10?
That's basically Wilbur Ross. And it's so frustrating because that was every Trump administration official for the past 3 weeks or 35 days. Basically, they were saying, why don't workers just like, you know, pull up their bootstraps and deal with it? And like literally... yesterday, Donald Trump was in a press conference and he was saying, you know, local grocers will know if a worker is a federal worker and they'll just give them groceries for free. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Local grocers don't really exist anymore, man.
So we know that the Trump administration has been completely out of touch when it comes to the shutdown. And not just that, but they obviously don't care. And there's been a lot of speculation as to whether or not this was the point, right? The idea to break something in order to make it new again, right? Break you down, build you back up again.
Adam Serwer says the cruelty is the point, which is like the case in so many other of their policies. So
right. But for me, I just don't know if A, they have that much long game. I don't think that they're smart enough for that. I don't think that they're playing that kind of game. Although that's exactly what they would want. Not to sound like conspiracy theorists, because I always end up sounding like a conspiracy theorist, but like that's what they'd want you to think. And there's just something sinister. Something doesn't feel right. But anyway, so as always, a competent woman had to come in and save our butts. And so Nancy Pelosi saved the fucking day again. Again.
Yep.
And she basically started by rescinding her invitation for Trump to give his State of the Union address in the chamber of the House of Representatives. It's her prerogative to do so. The Speaker of the House invites the president. The president accepts, and that's why they do it. And so she doesn't have to invite him. And so she didn't. And what I love is that her letter was very polite and very carefully worded. And to the point where the Trump administration, I guess, didn't understand what she was saying because they were like, oh, well, we've considered your suggestion, but we're going to go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah. Basically, she was saying there are security concerns of having every single member of Congress and so many members of cabinet and the president in the House when Secret Service is not being paid. And she sends this letter and the Trump administration, especially probably Donald Trump, is like, I don't give a crap. I want to give a speech. And he sends a letter back saying, oh, like we have decided there are no security concerns. And then she responds, yeah, fuck no. You're still not giving the speech. And every pundit throughout this whole process was like, oh, was Nancy Pelosi overplaying her hand? And every conservative pundit was like, this is a violation of the Constitution. No, it wasn't. It was not a constitutional crisis. Nope. She was on firm constitutional standing to disinvite him from the State of the Union. He is supposed to give a State of the Union every year, but it doesn't say it has to be in spoken form in the halls of Congress. It used to be written until Truman, I think, So
yeah. Well, it also even doesn't even say yearly. It's from time to time. Yeah. So like, come on, come on. And the other thing is, I mean, she basically just pulled out the best per my last email bitch of all time and was like, no, I'm sorry. No. Yeah. Actually, that's the other thing. She didn't even say I'm sorry because she has the stomach to play this. That's always been the Democrats' problem is we don't have the fucking stomach to play dirty.
Yeah.
And this isn't even playing dirty. This is just holding firm. And Nancy Pelosi was like, Nancy Pelosi has brought down smarter, more competent men in her lifetime. Donald Trump is not the worst that she's seen, and he's not the worst that she will see. And so for him to think that he could push her around or that he was somehow going to win this just makes it so clear why, A, Nancy Pelosi was the only person who could ever be the Speaker of the House in this moment. And B, I mean, it just shows, like, don't fuck with Nancy Pelosi. Don't fuck with women who are doing the job that they know they need to be doing. Don't do it. Exactly. You're going to end up, in the words of Cardi B, getting dog walked.
Yeah, I just was going to bring that up. So basically I think it was a week ago, Cardi B releases this video being like, yo, this shutdown is stupid. And it's an amazing video. She literally gets more hits on this video than the music video she released that same day, right? And then Tommy Lauren, I don't even know her name, whatever. She's like, is this really how people should talk? And Cardi B responds, leave me alone or I will dog walk you. And that was the day that everybody learned what dog walk meant, which was amazing. And then today somebody tweeted, after the CR, the continuing resolution was announced, somebody tweeted, so basically Nancy Pelosi just dog walked Donald Trump. And Cardi B retweeted it saying, yeah, basically. Even Cardi B is a Nancy Pelosi stan. So like everyone can just like stop complaining about Nancy Pelosi, especially people like Seth Moulton. I'm just going to say it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. I hope Seth Moulton is sitting somewhere in a dark room crying right now because there is no other person on the planet that could have dealt with this situation. Like I said, once again, Nancy Pelosi rescues this country from its own ass.
Yep.
Not the first time she's done it. I doubt it's the last time she's going to do it. And, you know, people kept saying that Democrats were going to eventually cave. And I was like, have you just never met Nancy Pelosi?
Yeah. Also, I'm just going to be fair. Like, have you also never met most of the Democratic caucus? They're not going to cave on this. It's not as if – also, this is so much more different than Democrats in 2003 or even Democrats in the 90s or even Democrats in the 80s. There are much more liberal Democrats now, but also much more Democrats who actually have a spine now, especially in the House. Because my least favorite senator in the Democratic caucus, Joe Manchin, he fucking voted for this stupid-ass racist bill yesterday to open the government. It was an immigration compromise, quote-unquote compromise. Really, it was just Stephen Miller's wet dream, which basically would have curtailed so much illegal immigration. And Joe fucking Manchin voted for it because along with it, you could open the government. Even Doug Jones and Kyrsten Sinema, who are both from red states, were like, no, we're not going to vote for this. But Joe Manchin fucking voted for it, even though he's not up for re-election until 2024.
Joe Manchin and I are not on speaking terms right now. I'm sorry. Fuck you, Joe Manchin. That was the title of one of our episodes. I don't like Joe Manchin is a dino.
Yeah.
Which is Democrat in name only. And fuck that guy. So,
yep.
I mean, that's the other thing that these kind of pressure situations bring out. Kavanaugh shutdown. This pulls out your true colors. This pulls out who you always were going to be as a politician. If you're Joe Manchin, you're going to fucking cave. If you're Kyrsten Sinema, you're going to tell them to go fuck themselves. And if you're Nancy Pelosi, you're going to save the goddamn day. And that's really what these pressure cooker situations tell us. Now, what would be great is that if we could get automatic funding for government positions so that this doesn't happen again. It's one thing to fight over other policy. It's quite another to take people's livelihoods away.
Mm-hmm.
So from what it's looking like, there is going to be a temporary resolution that will reopen the government until February 15th to give everyone time to debate on the wall and the immigration. But here's the thing. I don't think the next 3 weeks are going to have Democrats basically saying, okay, let's build the wall. I'm all in. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm a little worried that this is just going to be the process every 3 weeks from now until I fucking die.
Yeah. Every 3 weeks, the government shuts down and people are like, oh, great. This is happening again. It's just, this is a very normal government we have, very normal and equal. It's all good. You know, the Democrats' bill in the Senate failed, but 52% of the country was represented by, actually, it was 56% of the country. 56% of the country was represented by the Democratic senators yesterday that voted for the bill to just open the government, which was just a normal bill to open the government. But it still failed because the Senate is misproportionate. It is malapportionment, basically. The Senate is just fucked up at this point. That's just another whole other story. But I just wanted to point that out.
There is another story that I think it goes in and out of the public eye, right? And that's the family separations at the border. Over the so part of the shutdown too was that the judicial system was coming to a halt. They were out of money and we're going to have to start. And we're actually at the point where they were postponing cases. They didn't have the manpower or the supplies to run the judicial system as normal. And so many cases were put on hold. And one of the cases that the ACLU is working on that they were trying to get taken off of hold and said that this was of utmost importance was the family separation issue, because the Inspector General of Health and Human Services just released a report that said, while we initially thought that there were several thousand children separated from their families, the number is now unknown. As in, we don't fucking know how many children we've taken from fucking families in this country.
We don't know how many children we've kidnapped and possibly, who knows, orphaned, ruined their lives forever. No idea. Bananas.
We don't know, which is absolutely like, which you can't get away with saying that to your college professor, let alone the fucking country. I don't understand how that even happens, how that's even just I mean, I know that that's maybe the wrong thing to focus on right now, but the fact that the number is unknown.
Yeah.
I mean, when my kid says he doesn't know where his shoes are, I'm like, cool, you're not going to wear shoes today then. And then he miraculously finds them, because that's not a fucking answer. And so when you tell me you don't know how many kids you've taken from their parents, that's not an answer. That's a problem. And so it's more than the 2,700 that we originally thought. And it has been going on for much longer than just May of 2017.
Kirstjen Nielsen has to fucking resign. She is a liar and a horrible cabinet official, because what the fuck? Literally, the report also finds that children were still being identified more than 5 months after the original court order, mainly because they literally said, the report literally says, a quote, an integrated data system to track separated families never was created. They never created it. They basically never created, again, I am simplifying this for the podcast, but they never created a fucking Excel sheet with one sheet that says, oh, these are the parents that are missing, or these are the parents that are missing their kids, and these are the kids that are missing, and they never match them together. They couldn't possibly have done that. And again, I quote this again, as Adam Serwer says, the cruelty is the fucking point. Kirstjen Nielsen, as well as every immigration hawk and soulless person in this administration, clearly wanted this to happen, clearly doesn't give a shit that it is happening. And that's what's even so damning and scandalous about this, is that they literally have no shame. There's nothing you could say to Kirstjen Nielsen to make her change her mind that this is her fault, because she doesn't care if it's her fault, because she wants it to be her fault. She doesn't care that more than 2,500 children may never see their parents again. Or if they do, they will be permanently scarred, because they are literally living in baby jails at the fucking border.
And the fact of the matter is that what really struck me too was that this story came out in the middle of a government shutdown. Mm-hmm. And when the government was not shut down and was paying people and was functioning as expected, if not completely functionally, it was as expected. They couldn't even, it's not that they couldn't do it. It's that they didn't want to.
Yeah.
Is that they were never, it was never about incompetence. It was never about not being able to create a spreadsheet or, you know, use some basic project management software. It was always about the fact that they thought they were going to get away with this. And they thought that no one would come looking. Because it's not just about not keeping track of these kids, because that would have been fairly simple to do. It's that they didn't see them as kids. And we've talked about this before, right? But it's about othering them. It's about taking children who are brown and not seeing them as children. Mm-hmm. And so why would you keep track of them? It doesn't matter. No one cares. You know, and that's also what I mean by when I say it's so outraging that the number is unknown.
Yeah.
Right. That's more outraging than if the number were 10,000, which would be sickening. But the fact that it's unknown is actually worse.
Yeah.
Because there was never any intent to return these kids to their parents. And that's why kidnapping does not feel dramatic to say, because that's what it was, because they took them knowing they were never going to return them. They knew that. And if nothing else, if for no other reason, I don't understand why people can look at that and say that. I get that immigration is a really sensitive topic and that people feel very strongly about it. And it's a very inherently racist thing to talk about, and that race always is a factor in it. But it just really proves something when it's children.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't matter.
I agree.
And again, and this actually ties in really beautifully with another story about people's mm-hmm. kids, which is the Covington Catholic Church Catholic school kids who were taunting a Native man at a March for Life protest. It's just the two stories for me have just collided together this week, right? It kind of they're unrelated in many ways, but what it is like we're giving these white teenagers who are young, who are 15 and 16 years old, we're giving them as a country the benefit of the doubt, and we are giving them airtime on the Today Show, and we're giving them space and calling them, oh, they're just kids, like they're being disrespectful, but they're not hurting anyone. And there's a million different narratives there, and we are not giving the same compassion or consideration to four-year-old children yep. at the border.
Literally, Sarah Huckabee Sanders went on TV and she said, I cannot believe liberals want to destroy these kids' lives. And she was not talking about the kids at the border, not talking about the two children and maybe more who have died because they came to the border sick
yeah.
and ORR and HHS did not take care of them effectively. She was talking about the Covington kids and this idea that they were right. being wronged by the media as well as by liberals for some reason. Also, MLK Day was just this past week. And all day on Monday, a bunch of people were like, why are you judging people who wear MAGA hats by the color of their hat and not the content of their character? It was literally mind-numbing to read the tweets that day because it was so stupid. This idea yeah. that I should give somebody respect because they choose – I should give somebody respect of their political views when their political views are actively trying to hurt somebody. That was their political statement that day when they were at this stupid March for Life rally and they started smirking at a Native man who wasn't bothering anybody. Nathan Phillips wasn't bothering anyone. He was just beating a drum. He was doing what he does. He's literally a war veteran. He wasn't bothering anyone. And – people, especially conservatives, but also, you know, quote unquote well-meaning liberals were really quick to reverse their judgment when the next day a PR firm that the parents had hired said, oh, we weren't doing anything. We were being totally respectful. And they were like, oh, I'm so sorry. I must have not seen the whole context of the video. When you watch the longer video, it's even worse because they say other horrible things. And when you look into these kids and what's going on at Covington Catholic, and again, I'm not a Catholic. I haven't been to Catholic high school, so I'm not going to speak largely and generalize about Catholic high schools in general. But these kids also, a couple years ago, were in blackface at a fucking school game. They were in blackface taunting a black basketball player at a school game. So this idea that we should give kids the benefit of the doubt just because they're kids is only afforded to white children. It is not afforded to people who are at the border. It's not afforded to unarmed black teenagers. No, those are adults. It's not afforded to undocumented migrants, specifically children, because you know, those people chose to take the dangerous journey to cross the border. Yeah, you're so right. It's really indicative of where our priorities lie, and it's really scary that that's where our priorities lie. But it's nothing. I shouldn't be surprised, but it is still shocking, because obviously we have a history of racism in this country. But yeah, that's basically what it is.
Well, and people do always think that, oh, it's children that change people's mm-hmm. minds, but it's not. And then that's really what this is saying. And you're right. I mean, you're exactly right. The so much of the justification around shooting unarmed black teenagers is that, oh, but they're really adults. They really look like adults. They're adults. These kids deserve better than us. They deserve better than us. And we don't know. I don't think we'll ever know how many were taken from their parents. And I don't think we'll ever know, too, because I don't even know that everyone will be able to tell their stories. Depending on how young they are, they might not ever remember fully. And this is such a traumatic experience that, you know, a lot of this is going to be buried not only by bureaucracy, but, you know, yeah. in self-protection. And for everything that Trump has done, that is what I will never forgive him for.
Yeah. It
because we won't even be able to tell these stories. They are literally lost to us.
It is truly inhumane. There is one thing if we could, as people who are against this policy, could hope for and assume that one day all of these children will be reunited with these parents and it would be not okay, but better than it was today. But we literally cannot promise them that. And that is, I agree, completely unforgivable.
Yeah.
Because it is one thing to say, I'm going to be cruel and separate you from your parents and put you in a baby jail. But eventually, you know, Congress will investigate and I will have to cave and give you back to your parents. But we don't know what Kirstjen Nielsen has done with all of these records or lack thereof. We have no idea what's going to happen. And I agree with that. It is completely unforgivable.
Yeah. 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 And which is also why I don't have much patience for the Covington kids either. Not because I don't think we need to publicly flay 15 and 16 year olds for anything, because if you ever met a 16 year old boy, they are the fucking worst. And that's not that surprising. But I like all of this apologia and all of this fucking nonsense about ruining their lives. I have no time for that. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to think about it. Like, because those are not the kids that we need to care about right now. They weren't even affected for the most part. I mean, really.
Yeah. No, Donald Trump is probably going to invite them to the fucking White House because he did tweet about them, by the way. So like their lives were not ruined. In fact, what's the sickening thing about this country is that they were actually elevated. And this is this is actually an underlying problem with all of these stories, not just the kids at the border and the Covington kids, but also the shutdown. The way that certain outlets, not all outlets, I'm not painting with a wide brush, but certain outlets report on stories like this is that they make it seem as if both sides, literally both sides, are at fault for a problem.
Right.
they made it seem after the first day, because the first day the Covington, you know, video came out, everyone was like, oh, these kids are horrible. And then the next day, the media started wringing its hands after this PR thing that came out from the Covington kids' parents. They're like, oh, were we wrong? And there were like a billion takes about how maybe we were wrong and we shouldn't rush to judgment. And are people really judging people for wearing a red hat and all this BS? The same thing happened with the shutdown. Yesterday, when Democrats refused to vote for this really stupid immigration bill to open the government, and then Republicans refused to open the government in the Senate with the normal Democratic bill, the AP tweeted it out as if it was Democrats who were blocking Donald Trump from opening the government in the Senate. And I was like, no, right. Democrats don't control the Senate. What are you doing? Right. And that right. It's the same thing is happening with these kids. At some point, we continue to give more credence than is necessary to how hard this job must be of reuniting kids and keeping track of these kids, when nobody, very few people in the media, except for certain outlets, are treating the story as the true humanitarian and horrific crisis that it is. And by media, I mean cable news. Like the way right. it's being talked about, it's as if people are accepting certain, not all outlets, but certain cable news outlets are accepting the administration's story that, oh, these two children that died because they jumped across the border, and that's a dangerous journey.
Right.
And, oh, like, this was a necessary policy, and of course, they had to be separated. They committed a crime. Like, the media, in a lot of its ways, is good and is essential and is a check on this administration, but certain aspects of the media is frustrating and is doing a bad job covering this administration because they hide under this need for objectivity, when that objectivity is useless in the face of an ever-growing fascist administration. It is.
Yeah. It's sometimes very difficult to even know where to look and to know, to catch your breath before going on to the next atrocity. And, you know, we Varsha, you and I come up with lists and lists of stories to talk about and things that are going on, and how do we stitch them together? How do we talk about them? How do we cover them in a way that makes sense? And that's the point, though. It doesn't make sense because it's a creeping authoritarian regime. And it's designed to confuse. It's designed to exhaust. And it's designed to attract, to take your attention away from what's really happening. So, which is why I want to just keep coming back to this Kids on the Border story. Because even though we will never have a solution, it will never be better. It cannot be fixed. And that's not me being a pessimist. That's me just saying, from everything we've seen, it's not even possible to fix it. They don't have the data. Even if we wanted the data, even if we thought they were just hiding it from us, they don't have it. There's no way. So I, even if that's all I can ever say about it, I don't want people to forget.
Yeah, I really don't. Like, so think of the fact that, like, it has been years since George W. Bush was president. And there are people today that forget that he literally started a war on a lie. There are people today that forget how horrific George W. Bush was in his Katrina response. There are people today that forget how bad so many other things that George W. Bush did was. Same thing with Bill Clinton on certain policies. Same thing with Obama, right? But this is one thing that people cannot forget when Donald Trump is finally not president anymore, which I hope is soon. But people cannot forget. Nobody can rehabilitate the Trump administration. I don't want to see Kirstjen Nielsen having a cushy think tank job after she leaves the administration.
Right.
Yeah. And I was just going to add, you were talking about stories that fall under the radar because of the shutdown. Kids at the Border was one. So was the story from the Supreme Court. Basically, the Supreme Court handed down its orders recently. It was just a couple days ago. And so people might remember the transgender military ban, which Donald Trump started in a fucking tweet to rile up his base. And even the Defense Department was like, what the fuck? I don't know what to do with this. And the Supreme Court, because this was appealed, and lower courts issued an injunction saying while the courts decide on whether or not this is constitutional, this transgender ban cannot go into effect, right? That is an injunction. And the Supreme Court, think of it as somebody was suing the Supreme Court because they're like, oh, my landlord wants to burn down my house. I don't want my landlord to burn down the house. I don't think they're allowed to do that. And other courts were like, yeah, okay, we're going to stop the burning until we decide the merits of this case. Supreme Court was like, no, landlord, burn down the house. We'll decide if it's constitutional later. That's what they did to the transgender ban. They put a stay on the injunction, which means the ban can go into effect. There are thousands of transgender military officers whose careers are just over while the Supreme Court decides on the constitutionality of this. And I was reading about this. And so basically what this means in my head is that there is, I would say, a pretty high chance that Chief Justice Roberts sides with the other conservative justices, just like he did on this order, to basically uphold the transgender ban, just like he did for the Muslim ban. And people have basically forgotten about this because the news cycle is so, so fast. But yeah, transgender people are basically under attack in this administration because this administration refuses to give them the right to even exist. And not just exist, but also serve their country.
Right. Well, and also, this also doesn't make any sense because first of all, elections have motherfucking consequences and the Supreme Court was on the ballot. I'm going to say that until I'm literally dead. I'm just going to say that every single day until someone hears me. But what's super interesting about this is that the way that this ban is taking effect is that it is not actually, it is deeming transgender service members as, quote, unfit to serve. So that's their new classification. So transgender service members already in the armed forces who have already been deemed as fit to serve and who are holding their positions and continue to hold those positions because they continue to be deemed fit to serve, which is the military way of saying you are qualified. That status is now just being taken away. That has nothing else has changed about these people. Just try and do their fucking jobs and live their damn ass lives.
I know this is about the military and people might have conflicting views in the military and military funding, but this ban isn't actually about the military. It is about a transgender person's right to exist in a public space. It's about the transgender person's right to exist as a human being, right? It's about, so the transgender bathrooms aren't about whether or not I want to use a bathroom. It's not, it's never been about bathrooms. It's never been about fucking the military. Like when we were talking, when the civil rights movement was happening and African Americans were fighting for their rights, it wasn't about, oh, I want to eat at this restaurant only and I should have a right to eat at this restaurant. It wasn't about restaurants or sitting at the front of the bus or using the same water fountain or using the same restroom or serving in the military because it took a long time for the military to be desegregated. It was about, I am an African American person and I have a right to exist in this country. I have a right to the same equal rights that you have. And that is what transgender people are fighting for. And that is what this administration refuses to give them, their right to exist as humans. Because there are also issues happening in the passport office. The State Department is routinely fucking over transgender people who want to change their gender on their passports. The same thing is happening when it comes to so many other aspects in state laws. There are state laws that are passing anti-trans bills. And so it's horrific. And this is why, like, when I was reading this, I immediately thought of what Devin says, which is elections have motherfucking consequences. Because if not for 10,000 fucking votes, we wouldn't have Neil Gorsuch and Kavanaugh on the fucking court, and we wouldn't have transgender people's rights being challenged every single day. It wouldn't be happening. You know, gay people are allowed to have cakes from wherever they fucking want.
One other story that flew under the radar that I also want to bring up. So apparently back in April, also, and I think we've actually touched on this before, but this is also something that's kind of re-come up since the shutdown began. And the Department of Justice last April quietly changed the definition of domestic violence and sexual assault. So let me read to you the previous definition of sexual assault, what it currently was. It was, sexual assault is any type of sexual contact or behavior that occurs without the explicit consent of the recipient. Falling under the definition of sexual assault are sexual activities as forced sexual intercourse, forcible sodomy, child molestation, incest, fondling, and attempted rape. The new definition says the term sexual assault means any non-consensual sexual act prescribed by federal, tribal, or state law, including when the victim lacks capacity to consent. That's it. That's the new definition of sexual assault. Any non-consensual sexual act. So it removes any language referring to contact or verbal sexual assault. And it you know, basically limits itself. So then, and then let me do the one for domestic violence as well, because that's also some real fucking bullshit. Before, during the Obama administration, the definition for domestic violence was pretty expansive and was vetted by domestic violence groups. And the new, and it included the dynamics of power and control and behaviors that include physical and sexual violence, as well as emotional, economic, and psychological violence. So it was pretty broad. So the new definition, definition for domestic violence only considers physical violence as felony or misdemeanor domestic violence. So it does not take into account any other types of violence besides physical. And what's also really interesting about this, again, not interesting, but more like there was the New York horrific. So also the New York Times wrote a piece about this. And, you know, I read the piece and I got to the bottom and it said additional reporting on this was contributed by Glenn Thrush. And I don't know if anyone remembers, but Glenn Thrush was taken off of the White House beat because of sexual misconduct allegations. And so the New York Times had Glenn Thrush working on a piece about the definition of sexual violence towards women for the New York Times.
Yeah, I also want to point out that basically yesterday and today, over 1,000 journalists across the country lost their job. Actually, across the world, but like 1,000 journalists lost their job. And there are still news outlets like the New York Times that continues to keep Glenn Thrush on staff. People at BuzzFeed lost their jobs after working there for years and reporting some amazing stories. And the New York Times keeps Glenn Thrush on staff. Just want to really emphasize that.
Right. And that's sort of an odd thing for me to even bring up when talking about domestic violence and sexual assault, except for the fact that they have a man who had credible allegations of sexual misconduct, and they not only kept him on the paper, but assigned him to a story about sexual misconduct. Like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. The whole thing is so completely fucked. And that's not all on Trump, obviously. Glenn Thrush has been around for much longer than Trump. But the fact that is in tandem with this administration changing violence against women statutes to be more narrow in scope, if that doesn't tell you exactly where their heads lie, if the fact that they don't know how many children they've taken tells you exactly where their head lies, I can't fucking help you.
Everything is just garbage, Devin.
Everything is garbage today, Varsha. Everything is garbage.
Nancy Pelosi and federal workers, but yeah.
Nancy Pelosi, everything's coming up Nancy Pelosi. Roger Stone was arrested and indicted by the Mueller investigation.
Oh my God.
And yeah, that was really great. And I just have been picturing Seth Moulton in a corner crying for a while. So, I mean, those things are good. Everything else is garbage. But
also Michael Cohen was subpoenaed by the Senate Intelligence Committee to testify in mid-February. So that's happening.
Happening.
It's all... Yeah, basically, like, I don't want to sound conspiracy theorist, and I really don't want to sound like I'm making stuff up, because I'm not. This is just how I'm feeling, but this seems more serious for Donald Trump's presidency than previous scandals and craziness, or previous scandals and bananas things that were happening, because his approval rating is still below 40%. It's continuing to stay below 40%, I think, for the past week, mainly because of a compounding of issues, I think, not just the shutdown, which was his fault, as well as Paul Ryan's and Mitch McConnell's, but also the bananas BuzzFeed report that was sort of discounted by the special counsel. But still, the bananas report last week that Donald Trump dictated Michael Cohen to lie and commit perjury. Like,
the
special counsel disputed that report. Specifically, they didn't dispute exactly how inaccurate it was. They just said some of it is inaccurate, basically, right? They wouldn't tell you how inaccurate or what was inaccurate. And so we have no idea what's going on with that report. But this idea that Donald Trump is telling people who are testifying against him to lie. And then he's openly witness tampering on Twitter. If you've probably noticed this, Devin, but he's literally like threatening Michael Cohen's like father-in-law. And you're like, what the fuck is happening?
No, I mean, this is a whole lot of garbage. This is like 10 pounds of garbage stuffed into a 5-pound bag. That's for fucking sure. So the whole thing is a hot mess. All right, Varsha, so before we go, how about some action items? So what are some things that Hellions can do after they listen to the show?
Yeah, I mean, well, the first thing you should do is still obviously call your senator and House member and thank them if they opened the government today. And also, if they didn't open the government today or they're Republicans, tell them you will not accept a wall. But the second thing you can do is, I would say, even though it's really early and it's 2019, still January 2019, start primary planning, like basically figure out who is running in 2020, which you probably already know, and figure out how you're going to do the research on them, how you're going to vote. Like, are you registered to vote in these primaries? Are you registered in the Democratic Party? Figure out all you have to do to make sure you are ready for this primary when it happens. And I hope it goes well for you. I don't know who you're endorsing or who you're thinking about, you know, supporting. But at this point, all people should really be doing is like researching the candidates that have declared, aka badass Kirsten Gillibrand.
Right. And Kamala Harris, who I stand pretty hard for. So look, you could have differing opinions. Everyone can pick their own. Just have some facts, too, when people start saying ridiculous things like women shouldn't run for president.
Yeah.
And can a woman run against Trump? And then just shut them down. It's really fun.
Yeah. Also, cool fact, as of today, only one of the declared 2020 Democratic candidates is a straight white man. It's Delaney. All the others are either men who are people of color or men who are not straight, like Pete Buttigieg, or they are women. There are three women. Yes, Tulsi Gabbard is also running, but there are three other badass women who are running for president. So it's all, at least in the 2020 news, it's looking interesting. It's going to be a fun primary.
And you know what? The fact of the matter is that it's exciting, but not outside the realm of possibility that there is only one straight white man so far says a lot. It says a lot. And it feels good.
It does feel good, yeah. And also, obviously, the last action item is figure out what elections are happening on down ballot races in your states and districts in 2020 or even in 2019 and get ready for those as well, obviously. But yeah, those are my three action items. Call your senators and tell them no wall, as well as your House members, and thank them if they voted to open the government today. Make sure you're figuring out who you want to vote for in the primary. Like, just do your research. Start doing your research. Be informed. And the third one is be informed about down ballot races.
Yes, absolutely. We're big fans of local politics around here, so that's also always very important. So, all right, Varsha, I think that's it for us. Hellions, thank you so much for listening and getting through the shit show with us. And we will be back next week. So in the meantime, raise some hell and remember to practice some compassion. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone, at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere.